Running my two summits has led to huge audience growth, tens of thousands of dollars in sales, and a behind-the-scenes up-level in my business that I could never have anticipated. And it is all thanks to today's guest, Krista Miller from Summit in a Box. We are chatting all things summits and challenges to grow your business and launch your offers. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Soulful Sales Show, where we talk about believing in the value of your offers, getting them in front of your right people, and selling more of what you do in your unique way.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Sales Show. I am delighted to present to you today an interview episode with Krista Miller from Summit in a Box. Now, you will have heard me say in the kind of pre-intro to this episode how much running summits has done for my business. Honestly, it has been a huge up-level in so many ways since I incorporated this strategy. And I learned everything I know about summits from Krista. So there was no one better I could think of to get on to the show to talk about why summits are so worth it and how to do them in a way that really aligns with our values, because we've all seen those kind of summits that maybe don't quite hit the mark when it comes to that. So let me just give you the proper intro to Krista before we dive in, and you'll hear us talk about summits, obviously, bringing in lots of leads, and also talking about challenges and how this compares to different marketing efforts. Summits and challenges have both been integral to my business, so I can't wait to share this with you. I know it's going to be super helpful. So Summit in a Box is where you will learn to replace slow growth and costly marketing strategies with a high converting virtual summit that will multiply your revenue and lead to your biggest course, membership, or group program launch yet. Krista's method incorporates highly targeted positioning and feel-good engagement-based strategies that lead to higher than average conversion rates, true connections, and making a difference through your summit in a way that creates ongoing benefits for months after the event wraps up. And personally speaking, Krista's teachings are what I have followed for my own two successful Soulful Sales Summits. There is so much that goes on behind the scenes to make them possible, and I could not have done it without Krista. Krista actually also has a special free gift for Soulful Sales Show listeners, her free Summit to Sales training series at summitinabox.co/series, which is a must have if you are thinking about running your first or next upgraded summit. So I'm going to put that link in the show notes, and yeah, just enjoy all the goodness of this interview.
Okay, Krista, so most listeners are going to be familiar with summits and probably have attended summits themselves. Maybe they've run summits, but I would love just to start with your kind of summary of why they are so beneficial, especially the way that you do them, because I know not everyone does them the same way or teaches them the same way, and what kind of businesses they really work well for.
Yeah, so I think when people think of virtual summits, the first thing they tend to think about is the list building aspect of it, right? Which is definitely a benefit, definitely exciting. We all need some fresh new leads every once in a while. But like, honestly, to me, that's one of the least exciting parts about hosting a summit. Like, if you need leads, great. A summit is a great thing to do, but there's so much more to it. So yes, we get the leads. Along with those leads, we have all kinds of opportunities to make revenue, which a lot of people are actually surprised about when I mention that, which surprises me because I'm like, they're such a wonderful revenue generator. There's so many ways to make money in a summit, from sponsorships to an all-access pass to launching an offer after the summit or as a part of the summit. My first summit ever brought in $16,000 and I was making $3,000 a month at the time. So that was absolutely life-changing, and they've grown along with me since then. They're such a great way to give yourself a good old like revenue influx when you need one. So we got the list building, we've got the revenue. They're also a really powerful way to connect with people in your industry who would be hard to connect with otherwise. So I have found that summits are one of the easiest ways to get connected with someone. I would say podcasting like this is the only thing that's easier to get someone to say yes to. Summit has a little bit more of a commitment, but it is still so much easier to get someone to agree to a summit versus something like a JV webinar or just a plain old affiliate promotion for one of your products or anything like that. A summit, they see the benefits that are in it for them, and that just makes it easier for them to say yes to and want to be a part of. So you get to connect with these people. As a part of that, they are then doing a lot of that list building. So you are getting in front of their audiences, but it's also, when you do it the right way, a way to start relationships with these people that will benefit you for years and years down the road. There are people today who I still collaborate with because of the first summit I ever hosted back in 2018. 6 years later, those relationships are still, you know, bringing results and also just make business more fun when you, you know, have a bunch of people you know in the industry. Another thing I've found with summits is that it's a great way to re-engage your existing audience. So yes, we want to generate new leads, but if you already have done the work to build even a small audience already, let's do something every once in a while that gets, you know, wakes them up to why they're on your email list, why they're following you on social media. And a summit is a really great way to re-engage those people. And again, get them to join your programs or buy your All Access Pass and make some extra revenue and serve them really well in that regard. And it's also just a great way to serve your audience. There's a free aspect to summits as well as like the paid All Access Pass I've been mentioning here and there, but that free access serves your people so well, no matter where they're at financially, like they can come and, you know, enjoy the free part of the summit, pick and choose which presentations are going to be the most helpful for them. So really, I like to look at a summit as one of the only strategies out there, maybe even the only strategy out there that's a full funnel, all in one strategy, from attracting new leads to warming them up to engaging your existing audience to making like that first little tripwire type sale to making a sale of your signature offer and making raving fans all at once. It's such a powerful strategy. And because of that, summits are really great for any stage of business. If you are confident in your messaging, you can host a summit. What I don't like to see people do is they're brand new. They don't really know what they're trying to say or how to say it in a way that will grab people's attention. That's the type of person I don't really want to see host a summit, because there are much easier ways to verify that your messaging works than like spending 3 months planning a summit and finding out that it's wrong. You know, I don't want you to do that. So once you know that your messaging is good, you know what your people want from you, go ahead and host that summit. So many people think, oh, I need to go build an audience before I host a summit. But that is so backwards. The audience will get you that summit. I worked for 3 years to build my email list for a previous business to 500 people. I hosted that first summit and it instantly tripled all at once. I'm like, oh, what would have happened if I would have just done that from the very beginning? You know, I didn't know about them. I wasn't probably in a great space, like mindset wise, to do it. But a summit will get your business off the ground faster than anything else. And also, like I mentioned earlier, they grow to meet you where you're at. So like I've hosted summits as big as $121,000 in sales just from the All Access Pass, because they grow with you along with your business. When you have a bigger audience, when you have more connections, you can leverage those things and go in stronger and typically get better, bigger and better results because of it. So like it is just a powerful strategy regardless of where you're at.
I love that. And obviously, like, I'm part of your programs, I'm in your Facebook groups and stuff. And I love how people are always sharing in there like their results and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was planning my first summit, just feeling so inspired, like hearing the stories of people who didn't have the audience yet and like doing this event and it making such a difference to their business. Cause I feel like so many of us are like plugging away, like showing up on Instagram and like trying to invite people to sign up to our lead magnet from our posts and stuff like that. And it feels very, very slow. So if you have the capacity, and I think a lot of it, like, tell me if you agree, like, is just about like the guts to like claim it and go for it and ask people. And I know that I felt that way when I started my podcast and I had like a tiny audience. I was like, who am I to invite these people on podcast? But yeah, people say yes. And yeah, it can make such a huge difference. I love it so much.
Yeah. And there's like always going to be that feeling too of like, am I good enough for this? Like I've hosted 10 summits. We're gearing up to start planning our next one. And still I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to ask these people, like, this is scary. So like, you just got to embrace it, let it tell you that you're doing something right and getting yourself out there. You just got to kind of learn to push through the discomfort.
Yeah. And like you said, like those connections are amazing. I was literally just doing my 2023 reflections like in the last couple of weeks. And one of the things I wrote down was the connections that I made through my summit specifically. Like, so like just an amazing experience getting to talk to brilliant business owners. I loved it.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, is there anything about the way you do summits or the way you structure them, or I guess the philosophy around them, that you see as different to the way some people may have experienced summits before? Because I know people have mixed feelings about all kinds of different marketing strategies and how they might have experienced them. So what's special about the way you do it?
Yeah, so I think there are two things that are standing out to me based on what my students and clients have told me who come to me from other quote unquote summit experts, whatever we're supposed to call ourselves, strategists. That's what I can say. So the first one is that I really take like a people first approach. So when I sit down to do my summit planning, I am not first thinking about how much money am I going to make? How many leads am I going to get? It is, how does my audience need to be served? That's what I'm starting with. And that's what I coach my clients through. How can you help your audience? What do they need help with? How does it tie into your business? And how can you infuse your values and yourself into this event? So we're starting with the people. We're not starting with the numbers and with the big goals. And even though that might, for some people, that might be a 5-10 minute exercise, but it doesn't matter, because when you start with those things versus what's in it for me, it just trickles out to the rest of your planning process. So that's really important. And I also really tie that into my speakers. My speakers need to benefit, or it's not going to do a darn thing for my business if 20 people who came and spoke now have a bad perception of me and never want anything to do with me again. So I'm also very focused on getting results from my speakers, which I teach my students, and they've told me that that's a big part that stands out to them, is their speakers actually get results when they switch to using my model. And I also remove things that some people do, like list size requirements for speakers and like all these wild promo requirements. I think it's okay to have some promo requirements, but I'm not going to say you have to send 3 solo emails and like sell your soul to be a part of my summit. Or I'm not going to say you're of value to me, I want you to speak at my summit, if you have 5,000 people on your email list. That's just not, that's not how it should work. So the people first approach is something that I think helps us stand out a lot from others out there. Then on the flip side of that is the revenue generating aspect. So I actually just had a student last month, or I guess a client, she joined our accelerator program. She had hosted 2 or 3 summits using the framework from another really known summit strategist. And she actually coached in the summit strategist program. She came and joined our program, switched to using our method, and made, I think it was 46 times more revenue than she made in this other program, because we focus on the revenue. We focus on conversion rates. It's not just a lead generation strategy. You can make money with it when you do it the right way. So, you know, all those things that are included in doing it the right way, I'm happy to get into some of them. Like, that's a big part of what makes it work for us. I'm really focused on the conversion rates, because if you're going to go through the work to doing it, like it has to actually work. Industry standard conversion rates for a summit are just not worth it. And we've uncovered ways to literally triple or quadruple what industry standard summits see. So the focus on that is a big part of how we're different as well.
I love that. It's like the perfect combination of the strategy that works and actually caring about the whole experience deeply.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So yeah, what does work? Like, I know that you talk specifically about summits working really well for launching. So summits in and of themselves can generate the revenue from the All Access Pass sales. And they're also a really, really great vehicle for launching. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that and like what does work well, or who should be thinking about launching through a summit?
Yeah, I'd love to. So again, my main hesitation with people thinking about launching through a summit is I don't want you to get ahead of yourself with it. It's very exciting. It's an exciting thought to do something huge like a summit and launch like a new program from it. But if you are thinking of launching a new program through a summit, I would encourage you to pump the brakes a little bit and choose one or the other. And the reason for that is kind of similar to what I talked about with the messaging earlier. There are much easier ways to test if a new program or offer is going to work than going through all the work of hosting a summit. And I know, because I've done it. I went through the work of, you know, putting on a summit. Luckily, it was like the third time I had launched that summit. So that part was like, you know, as easy as a summit gets. But I went through the work of making this all new offer, a sales page, getting testimonials, doing like beta, you know, trials of it and stuff like that. I think we had 4,000 people registered for the summit. Not a single person. They were like, no, don't want that, you know? And that like is a crappy way to test a new offer. I would much rather like send a quick beta offer to my email list and be like, oh, no one bought. Okay. That's an hour of my life that I lost. So I just don't want anyone to do that. Another big hesitation I have around launching a new program or offer with a summit is that when you do that, that means you are figuring out how to host a summit. You're going through the work of hosting a summit. You're figuring out what you want your new offer to look like, creating the new offer, creating the marketing of the offer, and doing all of it at once. And that is a recipe to just really overwhelm yourself and burn out. And I've seen it happen. So choose one or the other. If you do have a proven offer, though, a summit is a really, really powerful way to launch, because like we talked about before, you're bringing in thousands of leads, you're re-engaging your existing audience, or your, you know, the people who are willing to be re-engaged. You are helping them make progress for free and connect with you through this event, whether it's 3 days, 5 days, whatever you choose to do. When they are in that, they're excited about your topic. They're excited about what they're making progress with, and they don't want to just stop after it's over. Mm-hmm. They want to continue. And your offer is the perfect way to be like, here is how you can continue. You will literally have people begging you, like, just open the cart. I just want to get in there, because they have just been enjoying the process of making progress through the summit so much, and they don't want it to end. So you're serving your people so well by putting that offer in front of them. A few tips to go along with that is, like, don't wait to launch if you can help it. I used to actually teach, like, give them a couple weeks. You've just sent a lot of emails. Summits are busy. Let them chill for a couple weeks and do your launch. No, that is terrible advice. Don't listen to Past Krista. They want it right now. And like the way I kind of counteract that, like, I know we're about soulful selling. The way I counteract that is I always have like a, you know, don't want to hear about Summit in a Box during this enrollment period. Yeah. Click here and I won't email you about it again at the bottom of all of my launch emails. Cause it is a lot to go from a summit straight into a launch. I like to like do that with, you know, some form of consent. So I make it easy for them to stop getting those emails. I also think it's important to build awareness of your offer all throughout your event. So it shouldn't be like, oh, this summit is great. Like, boom. Here's this course that I've never heard about before. You want to be building awareness of it. And there's different ways you can do that. Like the simplest example I can give is like whenever you introduce yourself, I'm so-and-so, or I'm Krista, creator of the Launch with the Summit Accelerator program, where I help you XYZ, and then move on to whatever you're talking about. Yeah. That's how many chances for them to hear about your offer, at least probably 5 to 10 throughout the course of your summit. And there are other, you know, more involved things you can do, but you want them to know that the offer is coming before you open the door, so that they have a chance to be excited about it and be thinking about it, even if it's not a conscious thing on their part.
Yeah. To me, that totally embodies like the way that I see soulful selling. I mean, what you said about people want, the right people want more, and the people who it's not right for right now can opt out. I feel like that is really, really important. Like, for the people who do want more, you are serving them by selling off the back of the summit. I'm curious what you have to say about, like, how does it change summit topic and audience? What things do you have in mind, like whether you're launching off the back of the summit or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like with your summit audience and topic, it's always really important to get specific. I know that's no news to you, Ruth. You've probably heard me talk about it 5,000 times, but for everyone else, like if you have a broader audience, you need to narrow in for your summit. It is very hard to get away with the you know, triple or quadrupled conversion rates I talked about with audiences like online business owners, creative business owners, moms, professionals. Like those are the ones I hear most often. It's hard. And like, so for me, that is who I target. I target online business owners. So for our summits, we are niching down inside of that. And we host summits for course creators, membership site owners, podcasters, speakers. And even those are honestly very broad. Like we see lower conversion rates than a lot of our clients do because of it. But like, that's just the easiest example I can give. So if you do target a broader audience, what subsets are inside of that audience? And then that actually makes it a lot easier to get a topic that matters to these people, to get a topic that's really specific. So I could go out and I could say, I'm hosting a summit to help you grow your business using a virtual summit. Or I could say, I'm hosting a summit for membership site owners to, you know, get their next 100 members using a virtual summit. That is so much more specific and attention grabbing for those people. So, you know, play around with that first. And then you also do want to tie in your offer. So let me see it. Think of an example here that I see issues with a lot. Like if you had a course on like Pinterest marketing 101, you probably wouldn't want to host a Pinterest summit, because they'd be like, why do I need this 101 course when I just went through this awesome summit? You want to make sure that your summit is like the step before your course, or helping them see how much they need your course or something like that. So usually summits don't lead into 101 level offers very well. It's like a better fit for whatever your signature offer is. So for us, when we do host summits, again, let's say to help membership site owners host a summit and, you know, fill their membership with people, that makes them be like, oh, wow, summits are really powerful. And also, oh, wow, summits are lots of work. So when I'm like, here's my program and exactly how to launch a membership with the summit, they're like, oh, yes, please. Like, that sounds great. So you want to make sure your summit is leading into your program rather than like removing the need for it.
Yeah, yeah, that makes total sense. So if someone was listening to this and thinking, yeah, I think I want to run a summit. Either they've decided, yeah, I've got an offer that I can launch through my summit, or I just want to run a summit for all those other benefits you talked about. What would be the, just your quick overview of what they need to be thinking about? Like, obviously their niche and their, like, their topic and target audience, really, really important. Is there anything else you would add? Like, this is the most important thing you want to think about, or even maybe like the timing of it and what to start with?
Yeah. So, I mean, I like to have you think about the audience and topic first, because that's something that can hold people up. I would rather have you have that decided before you officially start the timeline, so that you're not like 3 weeks in still like, I don't know who I'm going to host this for. From there, it is pick a date, put a date on the calendar, because a summit isn't going to happen on accident. If you don't choose a date and make an action plan around it, it's just not going to happen. So if you are hosting a summit without a launch, give yourself 90 days. If you are going to launch, add an extra 2 weeks to 30 days, depending on how like rinse and repeat your launch strategy is. Like for us, we go in, we can duplicate our emails and tweak them. We have the sales page set. I have my webinar slides ready to pull up. So, you know, I can add 2 weeks on and it's fine. If you need a little more time to, you know, finesse your emails or rewrite them and make a new webinar, you're going to want a little more time. So minimum 90 days for a summit. From there, what to start thinking about is who you're going to have speak. Your speakers are a huge part of your summit actually being successful. You need the audience and topic. Those are like make it or break it type decisions. So are your speakers. Because you don't want to have to rely on ads or your existing audience to host a summit. That like totally defeats the purpose. So your speakers need to be able to bring the audience and be willing to bring the audience. So a couple of things to look for there are speakers who have the exact same audience as your summit. And when I say that, it might be like, well, duh, but so many people mess that up. And I messed that up for my first three summits. In my third summit, afterwards, I was doing my affiliate payouts. I'm like, why am I paying these people thousands of dollars and these people like 70? Like, what is the difference? And so I sorted by like the amount I had paid people. And it was like this total aha moment. Like, oh my gosh, all of these people at the top of my list target designers, which is who my summit was for. Mm-hmm. Everyone else targets creative business owners. So yes, designers are in there, but it's not as specific. And that like started this whole movement. I started this whole movement of really trying to get people, get speakers who have the exact same audience as your summit. And that is going to make all the difference. Also with speakers, a lot of people put a lot of stress on themselves to get like the biggest and best, most well-known names out there. But that's actually not going to do a darn thing for you. It is very rare that I hear about some bigwig speaker actually promoting and doing anything to help the summit along other than, you know, looking pretty on the registration page. So don't overvalue the size of someone's audience. That's why, like, when I hear of these other people teaching summit hosts to like have a minimum list size of 5,000, 10,000 people, I'm like, why? Those people aren't going to promote. People are so much more excited about the opportunity when they have a slightly smaller audience. It's not them doing you a favor. It's you guys teaming up to pull off something awesome. And you want people with that mindset. So the more you can, you know, bring in people with the right audience who you have a relationship with, the better, because the people who already know and love you are going to go harder for you than anyone else. But really just look at that audience size and how these people engage with their audience. So you can be confident, like, yes, they would come here and, you know, they would show up for something like this. And I would say those are like the biggest pieces of the puzzle. Summit is a whole beast and I could, you know, walk through the entire process for an hour, for a day. But those are, you know, the big pieces that I want you to think about before you actually dive in.
I mean, I'm guessing you cover some of this stuff in your free series.
Yeah, we have a 10-part training series that really walks you through the first things you need to be paying attention to, and it gives you an overview of the entire process. So that is a really great way to start.
Yeah, so that's summitinabox.co/series. I'll put the link to that in the show notes. I just want to say from my experience, like the timing thing, I feel like I was dilly-dallying around like making an actual, like setting the date and like going back and forth, and that did not serve me well, but like giving myself more space and time than I thought I needed. And you definitely emphasize that like a lot in your planning, in the trainings. Yes, that was very important for me. Okay. I actually wanted to ask you one more thing specifically about summits, and then we'll talk about like how it compares to like different marketing methods. What do you say to people who say that there are too many summits these days? Like it's oversaturated.
I love it, because the reason that there are so many summits is because they work, right? Mm-hmm. Like the strategies that don't work are the ones you see petering out. I do not see summits petering out because people are like, fine, I'll do it. I hate summits, but I'll do it. And then they're like, oh, I'm already planning my next one, but this one's not even done yet. Like I have three clients right now who are like in that exact same boat, have been avoiding summits for years. And now they're doing it. They're like, oh, this is really awesome. So summits are out there because they work well. And I think avoiding a strategy just because of that is a mistake, but also use it as a reason to get creative with your audience, with your topic, with the, you know, the way your summit is formatted, make it stand out. That's also why like having that niche and topic are so important, because like there are so many summits out there to help online business owners grow your business. You got to get more creative than that. So yes, there are a lot of them, but it's because they work.
Yeah. And I agree with that. Like the ones that like, there may be a lot of them, but if they're good, they're good. And you still want to be part of it. Like I still sign up for summits that are compelling to me. And I ran my summit in October, which I know is like notoriously busy for summits. And when I was running it, like I saw other summits like popping up, and it does like get to you a little bit, but I still got loads of people involved in my summit. So it still worked, even though I saw loads of other summits happening at the same time. They're all different, you know? So yeah, thanks for sharing that. So how do like, I know you've talked about all the amazing benefits of a summit. We also know that it is a whole beast, and it needs like quite a big lead up and planning and stuff. How do you decide, right, I'm going to schedule that summit in versus I'm just going to do a webinar or a challenge or something like that instead?
I love that question. Yeah, I mean, it comes down to what does your business need and what timeline does it need it in? If you're like, I need money yesterday, okay, don't do a summit. Do something that can make you money faster. If you have an existing audience, that is, you know, going to be something like a webinar. Nothing's really easier to put together than webinar if you have that audience. But you also need to pay attention to what do all of these various strategies actually do? So like some people host a webinar or a challenge thinking that they are list generators. So they think they're going to build their audience and then make money off of that new audience with something like a webinar or a challenge. And that's just not how those strategies work. They are not set up to grow your email list. And like the same goes with free and paid events. I have so many people who are like, oh yes, so the summit model is great, but I don't want to attract a bunch of freeloaders. So I'm just going to slap like a $9 ticket on here. So it's just people who are really dedicated and like, it's going to be fine. I'm like, no, it's not going to be fine. Those are two different strategies. A paid ticket is going to attract people who really already know you and are already warmed up to you. And a summit's going to let you grow. Like that's the list builder. That's where the list building aspect comes into it. So what does your business need right now? And what do these strategies you're using actually do? Like take a minute to think about it. Even if you're like, oh, so-and-so guru says that I should host a webinar to build my list. Should you? Like, do you really think that will work? So those are the, I guess, the key pieces I want you to look at. If you need results yesterday, though, like a summit is not going to be the right move for you. So like we have some clients who host summits quarterly, some more often than that, because they just like summits work for them. That's just their business model, is summit after summit. I'm not that kind of person. My first three summits were all hosted like 6 months apart. And that I was like, oh, that's a lot of peopling for me. Like I talked about earlier, I still get scared when it comes to speaker outreach. I don't want to put myself through that every 6 months. I'm just not ready by the time the next round of speaker pitches come up. So I'm more of like every year, 2 years cadence for hosting a summit. If that's you, you need other things that will sustain and grow your business between that summit. So I see our summits as like our big momentum builder. Like everything we do is more effective because of our summits when we do them once or twice a year. But then I look at what do I need between those things? So for me, it's like engaging my existing audience, you know, making money from them, but also serving them really well. So for me, like challenges are a big thing that I do a lot. So I typically run two challenges a year, sometimes even three, because they're so easy for me to put together and they work so well since I have that existing audience. And I've tried lots of other strategies. I've done paid workshops. I have done free workshops. I've done paid conferences. I've done a bundle. I've done webinars. But summits and challenges are the ones I always come back to that work so well for me and pair so well together. Because a summit brings that audience and all the other things. But then that means every time I do a challenge, my audience is bigger and filled with people who didn't buy at the summit who are now ready to buy, you know, 3 months later, 6 months later, whatever it is. And they just are like the perfect pair.
I mean, I personally love challenges for like me connecting with my people. Like I usually, when I do a challenge, will like show up in a live and it'll just be me.
Yep.
And I feel like there's quite a difference there. Although you are like, you definitely include a lot of information and guidance for how to make ourselves obvious as the host of the summit. There's still, I guess, a difference there between you as the host of the challenge versus you as the host of the summit with all these other speakers as well, right?
Yeah, I actually just released a podcast episode about comparing summits and challenges. I think it was like 2 weeks ago as of the time we're recording this. It's, you know, a January release date. Because I hosted a summit and then a couple months later I hosted a challenge. So I was able to compare numbers like perfectly. It was just a couple months apart. My email list only grew because of the summit. That was the only difference. So I had such a like a clear space where it would be like, here's the difference between these two things. And one of the places the challenge did shine was like engagement and my ability to connect with each person in the challenge. And like, I think you could like build pieces into a summit to do more of that, but it comes so much easier and more natural in something like a challenge where you are the person showing up and teaching and there's not a billion other distractions going on. Like you're there focusing on helping them with this one thing. It just opens it up for them to be more engaged and involved like with you personally.
Yeah. Yeah. I've made a note to include the link to that episode because I think that'll be really, really useful. And I know that your main business has been like supporting people with summits, but you're moving into like, you've got a new program coming up. Is that right? About challenges specifically. I'd love to hear more about like, I don't know, whatever you want to share about it, like your way of doing that. Like I love challenges. So yeah, whatever you want to share about that, I'd love to hear.
Yeah. So this is something that's been on my mind for a couple years now, is to help people host challenges because I've been running them since 2017, but it's been one of those things like, no, I own Summit in a box. I cannot teach challenges. Like that can't do that. But I've just seen more and more my clients and students get on the Summit hamster wheel that I talked about where they feel like all like the only thing that works for them is hosting summit after summit. And like, I have a client who's in my DMs in Voxer a lot. And she's like, I just want a break. I just want a couple months off, but I can't because my next summit, I need to start pitching speakers like tomorrow or next week, but I just need a break. And like, they can't give themselves that break because all they're doing is summit after summit. And it's such a long timeline. And it's like a fairly involved timeline. And for me, that is where challenges fit. I don't have to host summit after summit because my challenges are much easier to run. I can put one together in 30 days quite easily. And they get those great results from the audience I've built through my summits. And though that's like the fact that those strategies pair together so well is I'm like, I can teach challenges. So really I'm coming at it from a point of how challenges can supplement your summits and how they can fill like that post-summit vacuum where you're like, now what do I do? Like I have all this momentum. What do I do with it? How do I keep it from dying out? Like, boom, enter challenges. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the point of view I'm coming at it with. And I'm like being very upfront with people. Challenges are not a list builder. If you need a list builder, let's talk about a summit. If you have an audience you need to make money from and, you know, do it fairly easily and engage them and, you know, give a ton of value, that's where a challenge comes in. Helping people see where each of the models fit and then just helping them build a business that feels better and more like free space because of it is really my purpose with this program. So I'm giving them the how-to, the templates, the trainings, everything they need. And it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to give people a lot more time back in their business.
Yeah. And just before we hit record, you said that you're probably going to have a quiz or you are creating a quiz to help people decide which one to run. So I guess I'll put the link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. And it's already a question I'm getting. We haven't even released the program as of recording this. People are like, well, which one should I do? How do I know? It's like, okay, I will create a quiz. It's going to be at summitinabox.co/quiz. It will help you see summit challenge. Which one should I do first?
You already have the link. I love it.
Oh yeah.
And is there any difference in like, because I know like the importance of the topic for the summit is like huge. Do you approach it any differently? Is it similar? How does it compare?
For the challenge, you can get away with being a little more broad with the audience, but the topic has to almost be more specific than the summit and definitely more actionable. Mm-hmm. So like for our challenges, it's all online business owners. That is our target audience and it works great. But our topic, instead of like learn how to launch this thing through a summit, it's like, let's do the first 5 steps of getting started with your summit. Like it's very direct and specific. And those are the challenges that we see grabbing people's attention more than just like coming to learn about something. Like they want to feel excited that they're going to walk away with something tangible at the end of this challenge. So that's the difference. You have more freedom with your audience, which is exciting, but you need to get more like specific, targeted, and actionable with the topic.
Yeah, really helpful. And then I guess the last question I have about these different the summits and the challenges, really specifically to, for a lot of people I know listening to this, they will either be, you know, highly sensitive or very introverted. Mm-hmm. A lot of them feel that way. And like you mentioned, all the peopling earlier. Mm-hmm. And I also have a lot of neurodivergent listeners. I have a lot of people listening with very young kids that they might need to look after. And anything that they do, any event like a challenge or a summit, has to fit around mm-hmm. all of this. What do you want to say to those people?
Yeah, I mean, give yourself the freedom to make it fit, right? Like plan, whether it's a summit or a challenge, plan it and the strategy around how you and your life and your family work. Don't like try to do the other way around. So like right now we have a client who came in and was really stressed out with like some recommendations we have about, you know, showing up on live video every once in a while throughout the challenge. It's just like a suggestion. It's not even something like in the program, like you have to do this, but she's like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I can, like, like just today, even you can see my 2-year-old in the background home from sitter. She couldn't go. And like, this always happens whenever I do something big. It's like, cool. Well, we're not going to do a bunch of live stuff in your summit. Great. Not a problem. We can work around that. I also think it's important for things like that to have a backup plan. So for me, ever since like 2020, of course, every time I do a summit or a challenge or something live, either I am sick or a kid is home for some reason. So you bet I have a backup plan every time. So we're hosting a webinar in just over a week to launch this new program. I will have a pre-recorded version of that webinar for if like tech explodes or my computer falls over when I hit live, we could be like, here's the recording. Like she couldn't actually make it today. So like have backup plans where you need them. I think it's also important to give yourself extra space. So I've hosted a summit with a newborn before. Don't recommend it, but it was like good for me to be able to speak to now. Mm-hmm. I'm not neurodivergent. I'm definitely highly sensitive, but I have had a lot of neurodivergent clients and students. And what they will tell me is like having that plan that I offer is like the most important thing for them because they don't have the step to sit down and figure out, what do I have to do today? Or I don't really want to, you know, I don't really feel like it. All they have to do, open up my project plan and be like, here's what Krista says I have to do today. Or here's what she said I should do last week. I should probably do that now, you know? And, you know, again, I don't have that experience, but they said that it helps a lot. And it's one of the only, like my program is one of the only ones that ever made it all the way through because of how it's laid out. But I think it's just really important to give yourself the freedom and the space, whether that means a longer timeline, whether it means giving yourself the freedom to fall behind on some things. And like, that's kind of going to just have to be okay. I think just being really self-aware going into the process is the most important thing you can do, but I think you can make it work pretty much no matter what you're dealing with. And like, I know there's going to be some people who are like, no, here's the situation, you know, great. Accept that for now, maybe revisit in a year or two. But yeah, just work within your strengths and note any limitations.
Yeah. Thank you. And I know you had a podcast episode about this because mm-hmm. we talked about it during my summit. So I'll link to that in the show notes. Okay, so that, I mean, all of that, so helpful. I know we could talk about this like all day. There's so much, but I hope that that's a really good starting point for people. I'm just going to ask you 4 quick fire questions to wrap up the episode. So the first one is, beyond financial success, what impact do you want to have in the world through your work?
I love this question. For me, it's the ripple effect impact that I get to be a part of in thousands of different ways because of the thousands of different clients we have. The ones that hit hardest for me are people who host summits about like Christianity or people who host summits about parenting. And they are teaching thousands of people. Those thousands of people are going to teach thousands more people, and it just spreads and it just blows my mind. So I just love the heck out of that.
Yeah. Question number two, if you could give a message of inspiration or encouragement to past you earlier on in your business, what would that be?
That every step is getting you closer to where you need to be, even if it doesn't feel like it at the time, and to just trust the process because it's coming together.
Mm-hmm. Question three, what's one achievement in your business journey that you really want to celebrate yourself for in this moment?
Love it. For me, that is having 3 employees who I get to support. Like I get to support them. I get to create a job they love and support their families. And that blows my mind every day.
And finally, what does soulful selling mean to you?
I think it's selling in a way that feels good and comfortable to me. I am very highly sensitive. So if I do something that's not aligned, my anxiety is through the roof, but also in a way that I feel like serves more than sells, or the selling is happening in order to serve. That is really important for me.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Krista.
Thank you for having me.
You can visit Krista's website at summitinabox.co, follow her on Instagram at summitinabox, and don't forget to check out Krista's free Summit to Sales training series at summitinabox.co/series, where you will learn how virtual summits can become your most effective lead generation strategy, cash injection method, and lead to a long-term reliable increase in sales of your signature offer, even if you feel like you've burned out your email list. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Soulful Sales. If you have a moment to rate and review, know that it really does make a difference. And if you'd like to carry on the conversation, then you can connect with me on Instagram at Ruth Poundwhite, sign up to my newsletter at ruthpoundwhite.com/newsletter, or my personal favorite, join me inside the low ticket membership at ruthpoundwhite.com/membership. And keep doing what you're doing, because your work really does matter.